The first speaker is Sigrid Schade, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her from Europe. She has been here before. If you read her biography in the package, don't read it too carefully. It has her doing 6 full-time jobs, and I think a few tenses were left out. Her main position is the director, and I'll be specific about this, of the Department of Cultural Studies in Art, Media, and Design at the University of Art and Design in Zurich. She is the author of numerous articles, books, and catalogs. It's a very great pleasure to have her here today to talk on this particular subject, the Research Center for Artist Publications in Bremen, a model of interpenetration of institutions. Please welcome Sigrid Schade.
Thank you very much for inviting me. The Research Center, or we will probably call it Institute in the future, for Artist Publications in Bremen, an example of interpenetrations of institutions, or collecting against the museum for being integrated into a museum, which is in itself a paradox. I changed the focus of my talk slightly. You can trace the difference on the MIM website, which includes my abstract. The case I want to speak of, and I probably would prefer not to speak of it as a model and probably would like to take the word example or case instead, I want to speak of is the initiative of a small group of colleagues, including myself, to accompany the integration of a collection of specific material representing critical art practices into a museum. One of the aims of this Institute for Artist Publications is to reflect the subversive potentials and the aesthetic strategies of artists groups, or artists collectives throughout the 60s to the 80s, and partially still continuing until today, which had been intentionally anti-museal, and which, of course, are in danger to lose their potential while becoming a canonized part of a museum collection. It is by no way guaranteed that the work of our group, of that founded institute, will be successful. It has just started working about 2 years ago, and the forces and the traditional art institution, as Terry Atkinson would say, contemporary art museum, can already had and have their effects. I would like to discuss some of the paradoxes with you. I'm absolutely grateful to be able to be here with an audience aware of the museum's practices as powerfully structured by ideologies of art, artists, subjects and subjectivities, audiences and cultural values I wouldn't find at home, be it either Bremen, Germany, or meanwhile Zurich, Switzerland. And I must admit that the task I've taken up in Switzerland only a month ago is even more complicated, because the department I'm running now includes also a museum, which is a very, very rare construction, and I don't know any of this construction in Europe. There might be a construction like that in the United States or Canada or somewhere else, I don't know. The case. The new museum, Weserburg Bremen. Now I need the slide. Where are they? Is it that one? Thank you very much. It's an old factory building, a storehouse in the middle of the city, in the middle of, indeed, of the Isle of, in an isle in the middle of the Weser. The river flying through that city, and you just see a slide of it together with an installation, with a flag installation of Bühler, 1999, when that Studienzentrum für Künstlerpublikationen opened in that building. Okay, it's the new Museum Wiesebock Bremen, a 10-year-old museum based some sort of public-private partnership based on private collections bought in 1999, the archive for small press and communication of the Belgian collector Guy Skranen of about 35,000 items of artists' books, mail art, copy art, ephemera, multiples, journals, invitation cards, records, etc., mainly with a focus on the 16th to 80s of the 20th century. That is the archive, an archive which is some sort of prehistory to what we just heard before. The purchase was accompanied by the founding of the Research Center or Institute for Artist Publications through the NMVB, the University of Bremen, and the Research Institute for Eastern European Studies. I must say that the Institute for Eastern European Studies already had collected as an independent institute, independent of the university, but connected to the University of Bremen, a large collection out of the Eastern European parts, mainly from the Samizdat times. And so it was quite a natural thing to come to the idea to create some kind of research institute including all these diverse collections. Well, there is a cooperation contract, and the institutional setting is that, of course, the archive belongs to the museum, and also the collection of the Institute for Eastern European Studies belongs to that institute still, but the cooperation contract says that there is this cooperation in that institute, which is a research institute. I am the speaker, and there is one position which had been paid by the University of Bremen, which is in fact the position of the curator of that collection, and at the moment my assistant for 3 years. And what will happen afterwards, we don't know yet. So that's just one position which we gained out of this deal to be sponsored by the institution itself. In fact, the foundation of the research center was not really a condition, but yet quite helpful for convincing the sponsors to pay for the purchase, the sponsors being the City of Bremen, Deutsche Bank, and others. Together with already existing collections of the Research Institute for Eastern European Studies, I've already talked about, the whole thing represents one of the biggest archives of this kind of art in Europe, not integrated in a library. And that's also a rather interesting thing, that this kind of stuff, material and so on, has more or less in other parts of Europe and also in the United States been collected by libraries and has been integrated into libraries. So it's a rare case of having such kind of archive in a museum, which in itself has no other possession, collection, than just this. Because the other collections it shows are private collections which are just there on loan. So you should get an impression of how this looks like. This is in fact the study space where you can enter, and there are official office hours where you can go there and like we saw with the archive of the Browser exhibition. Every man is welcome to use that library and archive. The material the research center has to deal with has been produced and perceived by artists and collectors all over the world, mainly in Europe, North and South America, and Japan, and mostly in an attitude against the institution of the museum. The transdisciplinary, intermedial, cross-cultural quality of the artistic production within the context of low-priced and decentralized strategies of distribution, democratization, destructions of hierarchies, etc., seems to be in a contradiction to the museum. With the foundation of a research center, the curators and members of this institute have tried to acknowledge the special qualities of the art production being part of an intentionally internationally connected network, anticipating partially networking through the web today. The material is used by visitors, students, and of art histories, but also of art. There are courses held in the space, and the members of the Institute organize conferences as well as they develop exhibitions together with the responsible curator of the archive and the director of the museum, who is Thomas Deke. Some might know him from his former position as head of the DAA Day Exchange program in Berlin. During the opening exhibition, which was the last one, curated by the collector Gies Kranen himself, and well, there is also a catalog going with it, out of print, an archive as artistic concept, edited by Gies Kranen himself. We had organized an international conference on artist fabrications, a genre, and the problems of archiving in libraries, museums, and collections in 2001. And the acknowledged need to create further access to the material, and I think at the beginning of the 21st century, public space is shifting into the fragmental but connected public spheres in the internet, led to a cooperation with a European Union-sponsored project of Vector, a project of digitizing and, well, providing databases for specific archives and connecting them in the net in Europe, including such archives like the Documenta Archive and so on. The first exhibition, curated by the curator, Anne Turman-Jayes, who is my assistant, was a juxtaposition of painters' books to artists' books. The next will be on the use of photography in artists' books in relation to the production and the use of photography in other contexts, accompanied also by a symposium next year. So far, so good, or not. Let us face now the institutional ambivalences and paradoxes at dealing with such a corpus of work. Because, to quote Terry Atkinson, celebration of a critical tradition is not necessarily to contribute to that critical tradition, and the CAM, the CAM, is bound to re-establish the conventional notion of the artist even when the practice of the artist was intended to undermine it, as, for example, art and language would be an example, but many, many others too. The collector's point of view was and is, well, Gies Kranen had been participant of the movement himself. His archive was some sort of, collecting point for all those initiatives and strategies of artists. Lots of, well, items we have in that archive are addressed directly to that archive. For example, postcards and things like that. He was the one who was also one participating in that international network of things in flux. And he sees himself, of course, as the institutional voice for those artists, and the artist's intentions as Judith Mastai would put it. Historically, of course, he is right. His own ambivalence, giving the collection to a museum, is reflected in a constant quarrel he is involving the director, the curator, and, of course, the whole institute, in how we should present these things. And whatever we suggest is, of course, wrong, because it, in his eyes, already contributes to the canonization of a work or corpus of art which originally has not been intended to end up in a museum, like most of art was not originally intended to end up in a museum. So, there's almost no text. For example, in his last, and it's in fact the first catalog of the collection in that museum, and at its opening, it's without any text. The only text in it, besides some autobiographical notes of the artist, is the manifesto of his own archive from 1974. I quote from that manifesto, as most of the collected documents record activities neglected by the traditional art world, the preserved artworks are and will remain an important contribution to the knowledge of the contemporary art scene. And further, It ends with a very heroic statement, quote, "The Archive for Small Press and Communication wants to preserve the patrimony built up by people active from inside and not from outside the international art scene. Inside meaning, of course, the participating artists, and outside meaning, of course, museum staff and curators, and, of course, any other kind of scholarly art historians and so on. And to be witness and memory of actions independent of all power and influences, where the breath of nonconformism, liberty, and creation still passes." End of quote. What happens now to that declaration of liberty in a museum? The museum, of course, was forced to claim that the material it was, well, suggesting to purchase is art, legitimizing the sponsors who would pay for the purchase. Claiming that a postcard or other material, banal posters and things like that, banal in the eyes of the audience, accustomed to higher expectations, and also the founding of the Institute was an affirmative action in the sense that it signaled the material is worthwhile being researched by scholars, art historians, who had been initiated and legitimized through their institutional careers to do so, and so on, including myself. The problem of claiming the material being art is to acknowledge that it is made by single artists whose names can be differentiated, so some of the work might be collaborative work or not work at all if not seen in the light of a contextual body of work. The museum will classify the material by the artist's name. The name of the artist will be the classification system. In his critique of the postmodern attitude towards art as a practice of re-establishing art history as history of the artists, Douglas Crimp took the example of photography as early as 1981 in his article, The Museum's Old and the Library's New Subject. He criticizes in that article the strategy of incorporating photographs in the art museum's departments, where the classification is, of course, by names and not, for example, by other things archives could be classified into, like landscapes or horses in motion or things like that. Taking the example of the 26 gasoline stations of Rocher, he writes the following anecdote, and I just quote a small part of this anecdote. "Another story about the library will perhaps illustrate my point. I was once hired to do research for an industrial film about the history of transportation, a film that was to be made largely by shooting footage of still photographs. It was my job to find appropriate photographs. Browsing through the stacks of the New York Public Library, where books on the general subject of transportation were shelved, I came across the book by Ed Ruscha entitled 26 Gasoline Stations, a work first published in 1963 and consisting of photographs of just that, 26 Gasoline Stations. I remember thinking how funny it was that the book had been miscatalogued and placed alongside books about automobiles, highways, and so forth. I knew, as the librarians evidently did not, so that Rocher's book was a work of art and therefore belonged in the art division. But now, because of the considerations of postmodernism, I've changed my mind. I know now that Ed Rocher's books make no sense in relation to the categories of art, according to which art books are catalogued in the library, and that is part of the achievement. The fact that there is nowhere within the present system of classification a place for 26 gasoline stations is an index of its radicalism with respect to established modes of thought." End of quote. And I'm almost at the end of my intervention here. Of course, so one of the questions of the institutionalization would be how to preserve the radicalism Crimp attributes to the work in a museum context, and of which, of course, the collector is very much aware of that it is at stake. But another one would be, so I mean the collector is right and wrong at the same time, another one would be how preserve the radicalism which we attribute to those works or to the body of this archive, if not by historization. Otherwise, it wouldn't look very radical any longer, because from the point of view of today, of course, this kind of radicalism might not seem so radical any longer. If you look closer to the work, it's not homogeneous at all. If you look at it closer, we see, of course, it was a very limited audience in which this kind of material was fluctuating. It was more or less white male artists, and if you try to find out why there were so few women somehow related to these groups producing these materials and other kinds of questions, of course you can only acknowledge the kind of radicalism Crimp does here when you do it historically, because if you don't look at it historically, it loses its radicalism immediately. And so I think I can understand, and it was just an example to show how the institutional questions of incorporating such a collection into a museum were posed quite differently by, for example, the collector, or an artist could, because most or a lot of artists of these materials still alive, or curators might, the museum will. And well, we thought in the kind of construction we wanted to do in this institute, doing research and somehow having some kind of influence in the presentation in the museum, and also having influence on, well, the kind of scholarly reflection on this work, we might help to find some kind of solutions in all these paradoxes which are posed by this whole process. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sigrid. Ties in remarkably well with some of the other things that have been discussed on the panel.